Greetings and blessings, beautiful one. This is Christelle Tomlinson. Welcome to another episode of our Good Gas Mondays podcast. If you are new to our community, we say welcome. Wherever you found us in your corner of the world, we are grateful that we are able to connect with you through the power of the internet. And that connectivity helps me to pour positively into your life. And I consider that an extreme honor. If you are a long-standing member of our community, I say welcome back. Always love to have a strong and growing community of Good Gas Monday support. And I invite you, if you haven't already, to take the time, rate our podcast, give us a five-star rating if you feel we're delivering five-star quality, and of course, a review wherever it is you're listening to your podcast. I always take the time to read reviews. So as long as I see some brand new ones, we're going to read them inside our episode. And I look forward to hearing your thoughts on our podcast. It is meant for you, to serve you, to empower you, and to give you meaningful information to frame the perspective that you're looking at your life from, so you can elicit more joy even from the hardships that you experience. So again, welcome to this brand new episode. And as you may know, this is part two of a three-part series asking you a very probing question. Are you the weapon formed against you? We started with a discussion last week exploring how we can improve our relationship with and the way that we serve our bodies. And in this episode, we're going to talk about toxicity in relationships, how to spot it, and how to purge it. So let's jump right in. Now, as we do before we get into our main discussion, I love to drop some success seeds, some nuggets of wisdom. As they have served me, I pass them on to our Good Gas Mondays community so it can serve you as well. And this week, I want to caution you against what Daniel Goleman, the author of the book in Emotional Intelligence, calls the ventilation fallacy. It's something that you are able to confront when you deepen your level of emotional intelligence, understanding the right, healthy, and useful way to process emotions, even the most difficult ones like anger. Now, in today's world, it is very easy to get caught in that ventilation vacuum where you take your phone up, something is on your mind, something bothers you, or because you're online, you see something that triggers you and you engage in that by expressing your anger. And of course, the context for that is freedom of speech. It's my phone, it's my Wi-Fi or data, so I can use it however I want to use it. And people must learn to contend with difficult opinions and differing opinions. So if I am sharply for and sharply against, it doesn't matter how I say it. I'm not responsible for how people feel when I express my outrage, my anger, my annoyance. And so we vent. And for many of us, that's a healthy outlet because we don't have real physical spaces where we can go and talk through challenging experiences and emotions. We may not even be at a point where we are willing to consult professionals on a weekly or monthly basis to just pour out the feelings that we are bottling in and figure out how to distill them, make sense of them, organize them, so we don't end up personifying the feeling. So instead of saying I am feeling angry, you're saying I am angry, but that's really not supposed to be the definition of who you are. The emotion shouldn't define you. So depending on the opportunity you have to actually express your emotions, your phone might be the best and only way for you to do that. Now, it's not to say you can't engage in debate and that debate online is unhealthy, but the constant need to drag, to ventilate, to empty the bottle on somebody who you disagree with or around an idea or conversation that you're passionate about is actually not a very emotionally intelligent way to engage with anger, frustration, disappointment at all. So Daniel Goleman offers us some insight into how, through five clear processes, you can develop greater emotional intelligence. So the next time you feel the need to vent, whether it is in your relationship because somebody has done something to strike your last nerve, whether someone has added the final straw to the camel's back, you feel like you've been taken advantage of and people simply do not appreciate the sensitivity of your situation and you just have to let it out, I want to caution you against that ventilation fallacy. I'll share with you some tips on how to do it, but here's a fundamental principle. Ventilating does not get rid of the anger. It actually prolongs it, and it passes it on to someone who can continue the relay of anger. Quick example, you're upset at your partner for forgetting an important date, deadline, appointment, and they don't pick up from your body language that you are angry, and so they're going on as if everything is regular and normal. And you get to a point where you're just so angry that they're not even acknowledging your change in mood and the impact of their behavior, that you just say, you know what, I'm going to get this off my chest, and you begin to spew. That doesn't solve the problem because you have not expressed very clearly what the emotion is, except that you are angry and they are at fault for your anger. But most importantly, you've passed on these sentiments and concerns in a way that doesn't allow them to compassionately engage with you. So they get on the defensive and it becomes an argument. Or maybe they say nothing, but they hold that anger and develop some kind of resentment that they may never express that comes off in other spaces. So if they were going to get you a drink of water, they don't want to get you the water anymore. If they were planning to surprise you with a particular gift, they don't want to do it anymore. If you had a date planned a week ahead, suddenly they're busy. And so you've passed your anger on to them in a way that's not very constructive, and they continue the relay and pass that anger right back to you. And it creates toxicity in the relationship. So while we're going to talk about toxic relationships as the core topic, fundamentally, I want you to think about where you may be engaging falsely in this ventilation of emotion in a way that's so unhealthy that it helps to prolong the anger, the frustration, the disappointment, whatever the negative feelings are, because we've chosen a very inefficient way of communicating our concerns or hurt or pain to others. And by venting in that particular way, really what it does is invite them to join you in a relay that really you want to end. So if you want to end the suffering, because when we're angry, it's really evidence that we are suffering. Somebody has done something that has hurt us. We've not processed it, released it, let it go. And so we suffer. If you're ready to stop suffering, ventilating, or using the kind of ventilation that the ventilation fallacy speaks of, which is spewing it and getting it off your chest, that might not be the best way. The very best way is to start with yourself, get aware, acknowledge what you feel and why you feel that way. Your emotions are really your responsibility. Once you are clear on what you feel and why you feel, your next job is to take control of them. Nobody's responsible for your feelings except you. So that when you engage in this third step, which is to communicate your suffering to your partner or whoever it is that is part of this experience of suffering, when you're now expressing to them what has caused you to feel a sense of anger towards them, having identified the emotion, realize that it's really your responsibility. By the time you go to engage them, you're really just talking about the action and not the person. And so you don't get caught up in you are the reason and you're the kind of person. It's your behavior and it's your attitude and it's your pattern. No, we're taking control of our emotions. I feel this way because I had developed an expectation of what you would do in this situation. And I've learned that my expectation of you may not always be a true representation of who you are and how you will act or respond. So I forgive you, for example, for my holding of that expectation and then getting angry because you didn't meet my expectation. But I also ask that in future you communicate with me if you're going to have a difficulty doing this or meeting this need, especially where we have an agreement. There you go. Don't have to shout. Don't have to scream. Don't have to tell them all the ways that they are a terrible person and a disappointment. Identify what you feel and why you feel. Take ownership of it. It is your feeling. And then express in a very responsible way how they can ease your suffering. As the example would have shown, maybe then there's need for greater communication. But your job is to be clear on what you need to ease your suffering, not to prevent it, because ultimately you are responsible for your suffering. How you're looking at your circumstances will inform whether or not you suffer. But certainly there are things people in our lives can do to ease our suffering, not to erase or to prevent, but to ease it. And where they can, let's be clear, compassionate, and emotionally intelligent when we communicate those needs to them. So with that being said, we get into our core discussion around identifying toxicity in our relationships, and then an approach, four ways to identify it and four ways to approach the purging of toxicity in our relationships. So here are four signs that you are engaged in and perhaps the perpetrator, in a toxic relationship. Now, there are many other signs, and there are various psychological breakdowns of emotional traits, behavioral traits, etc., that can help you to pick apart the relationship and identify what elements are evidence of toxicity. But these are four main signs that even without professional help, you'll be able to identify. And the first is hostile communication. Now, hostile communication can happen in various forms. It can be overt and it can be subtle. The more overt ways of communicating with hostility, of course, are the yelling, the name calling, the use of expletives and hurtful phrases, throwing, breaking, punching things. And of course, using the body as a form of intimidation. So the person knows, hey, I'm stronger. Don't you dare try to, because I could if I wanted to hurt you. Less overt forms of hostile communication, of course, include your silent treatment, talking to the partner, the friend, the relative, and they are just not responding, pretending as if you're not there, not engaging with you at all. They don't reach out. If it's a friend, they never check in, and all the conversations have to be initiated by you. Another bit of evidence there is using a lot of blaming statements. So if you find that you're in conversations where people are always telling you what you are doing wrong and what is wrong with you and how you need to change, operating as if you're the only person acting in the relationship, so they could really never make a mistake because they're perfect, right? A lot of blaming statements are also a sign of hostile communication. Constantly interrupting the other person when they speak because clearly their voice has no value. Why are you talking? We don't need to hear you speak right now. Other people are speaking who have a valuable contribution to make, so be quiet. That kind of constant interruption is also an indication of hostile communication. And of course, listening, as we often hear people say, listening to respond instead of listening to understand what you're saying. So things like that can cause lots of tension and distrust and, of course, hostility in relationships. So if you realize that you're having that experience with any person that you love, whether it is a partner, a friend, a family member, a coworker, if you're identifying these as constant traits in the communication pattern between you and them, it may be evidence of hostile communication and pointing you in the direction that you have to do something before it rises to the level of a toxic relationship. So I wouldn't say one element is evidence that the relationship is toxic, and one event is evidence of a toxic relationship. It certainly has to be happening as a pattern over time, and it helps to get clear on what is happening when you have more than one signals that are kind of, you know, sending off the bells in your head. Dishonesty is the second form of evidence, we can call it that, or the second clue and hint that you're in a toxic relationship. People telling lies is evidence of toxicity in a relationship. A lie, no matter how small, over time is going to ruin, erode, destroy credibility. And where people are comfortable lying to you and eroding their own credibility over time, it also tells you what their allegiance is. It's not to the relationship and improving it and strengthening the trust there, because they know the lying breaks the trust. So they clearly have no interest in building the trust if they're doing the thing that destroys it. But it shows their allegiance is really to themselves. So they want to protect their feelings. So it's better and easier to lie to you than to actually share the truth. A lot of times people are lying, not because there's something wrong with you. They're trying to avoid feeling bad about something, feeling shame about something, and avoiding a negative consequence that may come from admitting that they did something wrong. Others actually feel better after they've lied. It's a hint of manipulation, narcissism, that they have the upper hand. They know something you don't know. You are making decisions with limited information, and they are really God, puppet master, pulling the strings. And they love to see things go their way because they're manipulating you by choosing to tell you parts of the truth or none of it at all. One of the things I've always said whenever I'm in relationships, like new phases of a relationship, do not lie to me. when I realize that you have lied to me, especially in the beginning, it ruins any opportunity of us building a relationship, whether it is an intimate relationship or as a friend. A lie tells me that you want to warp my ability to make a decision about you. You do not trust that who you are, if you show me that person clearly enough, that you are worthy of my friendship, worthy of my love, worthy of my trust and my loyalty. And if you don't think you are worthy of it, then you are not, because I don't know you. And what you're communicating to me is your own sense of shame, a feeling of insignificance, distrust, low self-esteem and confidence. And those things are going to transfer themselves into all other areas of our relationship. So when you don't have high self-esteem, it will transfer itself to me. Energy does transfer. So you're probably going to try and bring me down because my level of confidence is beyond yours, and you need to bring me back down to size. When you don't trust your own worthiness, it's natural for you to convince others around you that they too are unworthy. And that kind of internal toxicity, I can't afford to have that enter my energy field. So the first indication that you are being dishonest with me, especially if it's in the early parts of the relationship, it's a no-no for me, and I'm going to terminate the path to communication and deepening that relationship. That's a no-no for me. In fact, a fundamental component of the relationships I'm building with others is that honesty has to be a core feature. And if you are dishonest, and I don't mean withholding information about yourself because it is private and sensitive, right? Because I do understand that as time passes, you'll feel more comfortable sharing your truths with me. But there's something significantly different between that and you parading a lie in front of me to have me think something is what it is not. So I'd really rather you not address the issue than invent a truth around the issue. I can totally respect, Crystal, I'm not ready to talk about this now, versus creating an image and a picture that is simply untrue just so you can manipulate me into trusting you. So if we think about the reasons people lie and the reason lying bothers us, you can understand why it is a trait of toxicity in a relationship, because over time it tells you that you can't trust what this person has to say. Increasing your distrust means you're always looking over your shoulder, never quite comfortable. Hear them, but don't trust and believe what they're saying. And so you do a little more work to make sure it is so. That's a lot of work to sustain a relationship, to be fact-checking everything they say. So depending on the level of work you want to do to discern truth, you may not want to continue to pursue a relationship where lying is such a key and consistent factor. A third clue that you may be in a toxic relationship is a lack of support. Your partner, friend, family member finds it difficult to offer you support or to look at your work and your achievements in a positive way. So they're highly critical, always passing off with some kind of joke that is inappropriate, that's disrespectful, that's meant to demean you and undermine the accomplishment, make it seem insignificant. So if that sounds like your experience, where you can't get the support you need on your goals, there's always a point of a ridicule. There's always something else that they think you could have done better. That's a sign that you're engaged in a toxic space. So support is critical. You're fooling yourself if you think you can have friends, family members, intimate partners who don't support your goals, and then you still feel safe, secure inside that relationship. It's going to create a sense of insecurity, not knowing if somebody has your back or not. Yes, or knowing for sure that they do not have your back. It means you can't turn it to them. And vulnerability is a very important part of building and sustaining healthy relationships. So if you are around somebody who you're afraid to be vulnerable with, can't share the truth with, can't share your concerns, your anxieties, your fears with, problems you're struggling with that you need help crafting a solution for, if you can't be vulnerable with the people in your life, you can't deepen and strengthen that relationship. So support is critical to having healthy relationships. And then a fourth clue that you may be in a toxic relationship, of course, is jealousy. Now, for many of us, jealousy is an overt expression of annoyance, anger, disappointment, disgust at your achievement, your life, and your decisions. And it doesn't always come from a place of people wanting what you have, but they are just not able to process your success positively. So I've seen it happen all the time. People who you have decided that you don't like, no matter what they do, it's never a good thing. You can never celebrate it. You can never say good job. And you can never sustain a conversation with someone who is trying to say that this person is good and has done something worth celebrating. It really grinds your gears. It nedges the teeth, as we would say in Jamaica. It makes you uncomfortable and angry, and even angry at the person who is saying something good about the person you do not like. So jealousy is really that inability to frame it positively and to engage with it positively and be angry at people who see it positively and tell them they're being tricked, that there's a veil over their eyes. Now, there are people who may be doing that to you. No matter how well you do, no matter how your success doesn't affect their success at all. You know, you can't imagine, like, why are you so mad at me being successful? My win doesn't make you lose. It's because they can't frame your success positively. They don't know how to do it. So now you could win the Nobel Peace Prize tomorrow. They'll find a way to convince others that you bought it. You really didn't earn it. So jealousy also rears its head as a sign of toxicity. And if you're going to address those relationships, you really have two options. You're either going to try and salvage the relationship or purge by removing the energy from your space altogether or reducing the contact with that individual. And you decide whether or not you want to salvage that relationship by looking very clearly at the role each of you play in this process and how committed both parties are to changing the behavior and improving and saving the relationship. So there has to be a duality. Both persons have to come to the table, lay the cards down, and be truly committed to salvaging, because a one-side approach is just not going to work. A relationship requires that you be in relationship with the person. And if we're salvaging the relationship, we have to do it together. So one of the things you can do is just get honest about how you feel, how that person makes you feel. When, for example, you feel unsupported, you can say, I feel unsupported when I invite you to events and you never attend any. I feel unsupported when I share with you an idea and your first response is to tell me all the ways I'm going to fail or criticize the idea because it doesn't sound like something you would do. I would feel more supported if I would need your support in this way, and then open the door for them to offer you the support if they have indicated that they're serious about providing you with support. The second thing I would suggest if you want to salvage the relationship is create an environment for truth and forgiveness, especially if the distrust and toxicity emerges from lying. You have to decide if you're going to forgive or not. Don't invite the person to a table to tell the truth, knowing that you're going to use the truth against them. That doesn't make any sense. If you're inviting them in to participate in the truth telling and the reconciliation, you have to be willing to forgive. What does forgiveness mean? It doesn't mean putting yourself in the same position to be hurt over and over again. That's not forgiveness. Forgiveness is allowing the person to apologize, because, you know, that's the first thing. The person has to be sorry. In this instance, sometimes they won't be sorry, you have to forgive them anyway. But if you're looking to salvage the relationship, the salvaging only works if the person is first truly sorry. So give them an opportunity to express how they feel about what they have done, which should be remorse. Genuine remorse at having hurt you and caused you suffering because of the actions that they took, did not take, words that they said. So the apology must be sincere, and there must be a clear commitment not to repeat the behavior. And we have an entire podcast on the anatomy of an apology. So if you're not sure how to apologize, you can check our earlier episodes on how to actually craft a meaningful and well-delivered, well-meaning apology. So allow them to apologize and to express their remorse and an understanding of how their behavior affected you, and a commitment, of course, to not repeating the behavior. And then they hand the baton over to you. Your job is to forgive. Let it go. Do not hold it over their head. Clearly, you have learned a lesson from them, but you are trusting them to not repeat the behavior. But if the behavior is repeated, you have an opportunity to decide how you want to proceed after that. But don't ruin an opportunity at reconciliation because you're refusing to release the past hurt even after the person has apologized to you and asked for a clean slate, which maybe you promised to give them, but you really never gave them because you have it right down somewhere that you're not going to ever let this go. So you have to invite them into a space, an environment for true forgiveness and truth telling. the other two recommendations we have in terms of purging now, because if we're not trying to salvage and we want to purge, to know if you want to purge a toxic relationship or a toxic person from your life, ask yourself a couple of questions first, right? Remember, no family member, friend, partner is perfect. They're all going to do things that let us down. Their true character is going to emerge over time because the person you met in the first month or two is still unfolding. They are still getting to know themselves and their principles. So we have to be fair here. People are going to grow, and part of the growth is going to be uncomfortable, and they're going to show some not so pretty parts that we have to decide if we want to remain in a relationship, understanding that those parts exist and giving them an opportunity to heal. But if you realize that it's too much for you, you can release it. But ask yourself a couple questions first. So ask yourself, can my mental and emotional health handle more of this relationship? Do I have room left in me to continue in this relay? You know, do I trust the person enough? Is this worth more time, more commitment, more energy? If the answer is no, ask yourself one more thing, or give yourself one more task, because relationships are complicated and you don't want to take 1 minute to decide that you want to cut somebody off. Give it true and deep thought. The next thing I would ask you to do before you get to a yes, we're going to terminate this toxic person from my life, write down the ways in which the toxicity affects you. Take a pen and a piece of paper and write down exactly what the impact of this toxicity has been on you, your mental and emotional health, your physical well-being, how you feel about yourself, how you feel about them, how you're feeling about others after you have engaged with them. You know, is that toxicity soaking into you and then causing you to respond in a toxic way to others? And also write down what you think you have gained versus what you will lose at the end of the relationship. So write those things down, look at it clearly, and weigh the feeling of, you know, betrayal, anger, frustration with the person. Weigh that feeling with as many of the facts that you can find around the relationship. So again, what are the ways that the toxicity are affecting you? Can you write that down clearly when you say, this is a toxic relationship and I have to end it because it is causing bam, 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 bam. It's contributing to bam, 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 bam. Write down how it affects you. And then also have a separate list of the things you have gained and stand to gain by maintaining the relationship, and what you will lose if you terminate the relationship. So what you gain by staying and what you lose by leaving, and take a good and deep look at that list, and then you make a decision. And then once you have done that, the next step in purging, once you've determined that yes, you want to purge, the next step in purging is to terminate, clip the cord and the connection. One of the things I have found to be useful in framing hard decisions around terminating relationships, friendships, business partnerships, emotional relationships, intimate partner, is a sunk cost benefit. And it's the way we look at the time invested and the things that we have invested in the relationship to convince ourselves that if we terminate it, we lose too much. And that's why I want you to write that list of the things you think you're going to lose versus the things you're going to gain when you exit the relationship. So let me go over that list again. I think I said it incorrectly a couple seconds ago. You're going to write a list indicating what you gain from letting go of the relationship. So whether it's peace of mind, a good night's rest, what do you think you will gain by releasing this person and their toxicity? And then what do you think you will lose by terminating the relationship? When you look at that list, you get a clearer sense of the real cost and benefit. So the 10 years spent in the friendship do not earn them another 10 years to terrorize you with their toxicity. Because what you want to gain in the 10 years to come is worth more than what they have to offer you. See, a lot of us see our lives ending when a relationship ends. It doesn't. You have put in time, you have put in resources, but you have more time coming. You have more resources coming. Don't lock yourself into this mindset of scarce resources and scarce commodity to think that you lose yourself because of walking away from a relationship that you have invested lots of time in. You don't lose yourself. You generate new energy every day. There is abundance that you access every day. You open up pathways for new people to enter your life and offer value. When you remove those who are taking up space and blocking the flow of positive energy, stop thinking about what you will lose and focus keenly on the things that you will gain. But you need that list. You need that list so you can look it squarely in the eye. So there are too many people in marriages for 50 years because at year 20, they said, well, I've put in 20 years, so I can't throw them away. They don't realize that you're choosing to then throw away another 30 because of 20. That's even more than if you had stopped when all the indicators were telling you it's time to stop. So don't allow the sunk cost benefit to cause you to stay longer than it is healthy to stay. And only you know what is healthy for you and what compromises your good health and well-being. So after you've assessed what you lose, what you gain, I want you to adopt that mindset that taps you into abundance and the fact that you will always have more people in the world who will love you. Yes, you thought this was the love of your life and this is where it ended and this is where it stops and nobody else could ever. You thought that. But that was a fallacy you told yourself. As long as you can love you, there is always room for someone else to meet you and match that energy. You just have to set that standard of what you want in your life, remove the things that are in conflict with it, and create space for the things that can fall in line with that rhythm. And so the last recommendation here is commit to loving them from afar. People you truly want to see the best things happen for. You want them to be happy. You want them to find peace. You want them to have the very best of success. Accept that they can do all of that 10 miles from you, outside of a relationship with you, in separate countries, without you in their lives. And you can still love them from a distance. Love doesn't require proximity. You can love them from afar and be okay if you still love them. And I hope you do still love them, right? Because the ending of a relationship should not equate to hate. The end of a relationship should not equate to hate. So I do hope you still love them and are willing to love them from afar. Because you know the impact it has when you love them nearly and dearly on your mental and emotional health. And so it's safer for you to love them from afar. I hope this episode has really helped you to identify where you may have toxicity emerging and taking root in your relationships, and that it also gives you the kind of courage to approach those relationships with a sense of clarity, determined to either salvage it or to separate yourself and purge your energy field of those energies. But remember, ultimately, this is your life, your responsibility. You have to take charge of it, every single piece of it. Requires your ownership, your perception, your clarity, your wisdom, and your decisive action. Reminding you of a thought from Jim Rohn, it's important, critical even, to avoid the law of diminishing intent. The longer you take to do something, is the less likely you're going to do it anyway. So if you're identifying toxicity in a relationship, taking long to address it means that perhaps it will never get addressed at all, because the urgency will diminish. The time spent thinking about the impact of not making a decision will diminish your intention to actually make a decision. So don't spend too much time pondering. At some point, you gotta do the do. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Good Gas Mondays. I hope it served your spirit in a meaningful, powerful way. If you have a friend, family member, colleague who could benefit from this kind of meditation and conversation, hit that share icon and send this episode to them. Let them know what nuggets you drew from this and what value you think it could add to their life, their decision-making, their sense of joy, peace, and success. Thank you again for being part of our Good Gas Mondays community. We'll catch you next week with a brand new episode. And if you haven't already, remember to give us a rating on Apple Podcast and also leave a review. Lots of love, lots of blessings, and have an excellent week.